Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and every major podcast provider. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player on our website, which is www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or simply call into the show at area code 917-932-1068. If you would like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today's topic, bad behavior with children. And I have a wonderful, wonderful guest. His name is Dr. Douglas Riley, and he's going to be discussing his book, Dr. Riley's Box of Tricks, 80 Uncommon Solutions for Everyday Parenting Problems. There are some children who are a sheer pleasure to be around, and then there are others who have a penchant for mischief. Now, for the last 60 years, comic strip lovers who adore Hank Ketcham's Dennis the Menace have enjoyed the humorous antics of a boy who always manages to get into trouble, regardless of his parents' effort. Hollywood has capitalized on this whole concept with bad behavior with movies such as Problem Child, Nanny McPhee, and now reality shows like Nanny 911. From time to time, we've all seen kids out there that act out. Clearly, they are the ones in charge of their parents as they demonstrate bad behavior, especially in public places like supermarkets, restaurants, and parks. Some parents who are actually at the end of their rope will try anything in hopes of getting their kids to listen. And some parents have even gotten to the point where they're contemplating medication. Now, medication, that's not a quick solution and not necessarily the right solution. The bottom line is children that demonstrate bad behavior are tough to handle because they tend to disobey rules or orders. Now, what if you could use your child's uncooperative behavior to positively reinforce good behavior? In the book, Dr. Riley's Box of Tricks, this is exactly what Dr. Riley instructs troubled parents to do, and he adds quite a touch of humor and love. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Douglas Riley, who actually is a licensed clinical psychologist with more than 30 years of experience working with children, adolescents, and parents. So if you have a problem child of your own, or a teenager for that matter, you will definitely want to tune in today. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Douglas Riley to The Organic View. Good afternoon, Dr. Riley.
Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me on.
Dr. Riley, can you talk about your background and talk about your family and what prompted you to write this book?
Well, I enjoyed listening to your intro, and you know, one of the things I was thinking about was there are just tons and tons of books out there for kids that are way out to the extremes. I mean, I've written some of those myself. But I began to realize over time that there just wasn't a whole lot out there for the basically really good kids who get into that mode of driving you nuts. but you don't really need to be reading, you know, heavy duty books like, you know, like my book, The Defiant Child, or any of the other types of books from that genre. So there's actually a little family story that goes with how this book got started. It goes back to a day trip that my wife and I had taken with our two sons up to Washington, D.C. to go through the museums and have fun. And, you know, like any trip like that, it was long and stressful, and we had fun, and by the end of the day, really couldn't wait to get home. So we got into our car, got onto the beltway around D.C. and got into one of those infamous Washington, D.C. traffic jams, you know, where you're moving probably 3 miles an hour at best. So we're sitting there stopped and, you know, frustrated and tired, and my oldest son, who was always kind of prone to be highly inventive, used his inventiveness to come up with the most obnoxious noise the universe has ever heard of. It was this deep, long kind of sound that if you wrote it out in letters, it would be spelled something like O-I-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-N-K-K-K-K-K-K with multiple explanation points. And so we refer to it as the oink word, of course, but you'd have to imagine it drawn out to the point where it would make every hair on the back of your neck stand up. And so, of course, we said to him, you know, knock it off. Well, he had us. You know, there we were, a captive audience. We were in a car in a traffic jam. At some point in there, you know, we're realizing we're running low on gas. My second son is saying he's got to go to the bathroom. And in the middle of that, Colin does it again. And so every few minutes, he would do that. And, of course, at some point, we were yelling at him. His brother was yelling at him. You know, I wanted to clobber him. I mean, everything like that was going on. And he did that all the way home, which in our case was about 3 hours. Just every few minutes he'd do that oink thing. And so I think he figured he had us, so I had to figure out what to do about that because I couldn't just let it pass. So when I got home, this is what I said to him, and this is really one of the things that got this whole book started, was I had to figure out some way to get him to quit doing that noise. And I knew from dealing with him in the past that giving him a time out or taking away something just really wasn't going to cut it. He just wasn't that kind of child. So I had to come up with something special. So what I did was when we got home, I explained to him that he had so many of those oinks in his system that we were going to have to drain them all out to get rid of them. And he was curious about what I meant by that, so I said, we're going to have you stand in front of your mirror in your bedroom, and we're going to let you make that noise for, I think in his case, in reality, about a half an hour. And he was excited about that. He said, this is going to be fun. I like making that noise. So I had him go into his room. He started making the noise. I told him, you better not stop, because if you stop, I'm going to have you start all over again. Well, after about 2 or 3 minutes of it, he was going, Dad, Dad, I'm tired of this. Can I stop? I'll never do it again. And I said, no, I'm sorry, Colin. You've got to drain it out for half an hour. We've got to make sure we get them all out of your system. So after about a half an hour of it, you know, he was exhausted with it, and he said, I'll never make that sound again. And we thought we were done with it, and then the next weekend, out pops that word again, you know, in the middle of something. He starts making that noise again, and at that point I was at a bit of a conundrum. I thought, okay, did this fail or what? So I then had my own little epiphany about it. I then took him into the room, and I apologized to him profusely.
Why did you apologize to him?
It was just all part of the hook, frankly. It was just all part of trying to get his attention. You know, I said to him, I am so sorry. I thought that if we had you drain that oink out of your system for half an hour, it would be gone. But I was obviously wrong. And at this point, he's still smiling, thinking he's got one over on me. So I then said to him, so this time we'll have to have you drain it out for 45 minutes. And then I explained to him, if we did it for 45 minutes and that didn't work, the next time would be 60, and then it would be 75, and then 90, and so on and so on. And we actually had him redo it again. And as I explained in the book, we've never heard that noise again from him. And the other funny thing about it was, as my sons were getting a little bit older, if they started doing something that was highly repetitive to bug each other, I would just look at them and say, do I have to have you drain that out? And they'd go, no, Dad, we'll quit. So that's how this book got started.
Now, at one point, didn't your wife say it to you, you know, you're the expert, can't you do something?
Yeah, she did indeed. Yeah, she looked at me like, okay, you're the child psychologist. You better come up with something that'll work. So that was a bit of the challenge, too.
And one of the things that you caution readers is, as far as who should be using these suggestions that you make and who should not be using the suggestions. So what I'd like to talk about next is people that should not be utilizing the book and when they should be utilizing your suggestions.
Okay. It really is, those are very, very important points. First of all, the thing that I say to people is that you're going to have a sense of humor about you if you're going to use these suggestions. There's a lot of humor sprinkled throughout the book, and I talk at one point in the book about five rules about when to use these. You know, rule number one is stay calm, because you know if you try to go in using paradoxical or reverse psychological kind of things like this, if you go in and you go in angry, you're going to come up with something you're probably going to regret later on. So you use these things only when you're calm. The second rule I tell parents is you have to stop arguing with your kids. It is just an absolute must. For one thing, if you argue with a child, it deludes them into thinking they're your co-equal. And they're going to argue with you all day long.
So that's the reason.
Yeah. It's like in many ways, if we argue with kids, we teach them to argue with us. So I tell parents all the time, don't argue. I actually teach parents sometimes to say to children, hey, it's not my job to argue with people your age. You know, and again, you have to say it in a humorous way. You know, it's not like we want to hurt their feelings or anything like that, but we just have to point out to them there really is a distinct difference between a parent and a child in the power structure. I tell parents, I don't mean to knock on the moms, but, you know, one of the things about moms goes this way. Women are so good at reason and logic. I tell dads all the time, there's a real reason you're never going to win an argument with your wife. Women are just so much better than males are when it comes to reason and logic. So with a lot of the moms in particular, I ended up saying to them, stop trying to reason with the child who's primed to ignore you.
And you know, that's really actually very true. I could apply that to myself because I wouldn't really argue with my mother, but I would argue to no end with my father. And my father would constantly tell me that when I get older, I'm going to have a child that's worse than me.
Well, I certainly see that going on with a lot of the families I work with. The moms in particular will explain and explain and explain, and they're explaining basically to a child who's got, you know, two fingers plugged into his ears. I tell parents you got to make sure that you're having a lot of fun with your kids. I mean, one of the best ways to get kids to communicate with you and to, you know, do what they should be doing is make their lives fun. You know, get out with them and have a lot of face time with them. The other thing is I tell parents you got to keep it light. If we can't learn to see the humor in a child's attempt to defeat us, we're probably going to end up in a lot of arguments. I mean, you know, if you think about it, like with my kids, you know, for example, you know, I'm a bit over 6 feet tall and I weigh a bit over 200 pounds. So when they're 4 feet tall and, you know, they weigh 75, what's the chance they can really defeat me in the long run? So that part of it is something that we have to learn to see the humor in it. You know, and another thing that comes out with all this, too, just in terms of ground rules, is this. There's that old quote from Albert Einstein that says, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Well, you know, if we continue to try to use the same old methods and we see they're not using, that's another signal to us that, you know, maybe we should try some new things. And again, that's what this book was written all about.
But you see examples of that everywhere you go. I mean, it's interesting how even if you go to the local supermarket or it doesn't matter where you are, you see kids that will act out. The parents will say, stop it. And they'll say, stop it till they're blue in the face. The kid will just keep doing it. It's almost as if the kid just gets a rise out of it. And the parent just keeps going on and on and on. I remember many years ago, I was in a Toys R Us, was it Toys R Us or F.A.O. Schwartz? It was one of the two in Manhattan. And I was there with one of my nephews, and he was fairly young at the time. And there was this little boy that was throwing a temper tantrum, hands and he's pounding his fists on the floor, screaming his head off. And I just remember looking at the kid, pointing my finger, and saying to my nephew, see, this is what you look like when you act like this. Don't ever do this to me in public and embarrass me the way this kid is embarrassing his parents. And the little boy that was throwing the temper tantrum just stopped. And I think he was so mortified, but it was just kind of comical because my nephew would never do something like that, but it was just really funny how the kid just stopped, and the mother, and she just looked at me, and she said, she mouthed the words, thank you. I just think it was funny.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think we probably all run into those sorts of things. You know, you had asked me also about when not to use
yes.
the tricks. And again, I think it's a really, I mean, I'm certainly going to be excited about sharing some of the tricks with your audience today, but I do think you asked such an important question about when not to use them. The tricks are humor-based, and again, these things are for your basically good kid who's driving you nuts. So it means if, you know, if you have a child who is exceedingly defiant, exceedingly oppositional, you know, sort of, you know, a kid who, you know, you might make jokes about him being a juvenile delinquent, a lot of those kids don't have a sense of humor. And if you use tricks on those kind of kids, it's just not going to work. You certainly wouldn't use them on a kid who's developmentally challenged, or you wouldn't use them on a child who's depressed or anxious. You know, they're going to need other things to help them feel a whole lot better. So it's, you know, the ground rules are going to be, you know, you've got to stay calm, not argue, stop the reasoning, make it fun, keep it light, and use these things on basically good kids. And if, you know, if you meet those conditions, then you're probably pretty much good to go.
Well, it's interesting because there's some kids that will act a certain way when they know they have an audience. And I'm sure many people out there listening can appreciate that. It's almost as if when they're around their friends, they just act like completely different kids. It's like, who are you and where did you come from? And it's really challenging, especially when they start acting out, they start horsing around, they don't want to listen, and basically you're trying to just prevent them from hurting themselves or hurting somebody else.
Well, yeah, you know, the your comment verges on one of the most common things that I've run into in my work with parents and children, and it gets into the idea of parents having to repeat themselves, having to give a command or ask a question over and over and over and over. And again, I can't tell you how many parents I've talked to who've. They've used all kind of time out. They've used reward systems. They've used bribes. They've used takeaway.
Bribes.
things like that. And it hasn't worked. So the parents find themselves repeating over and over. So there's, you know, it kind of leads us into one of the tricks, if that's okay. A trick called two times for free. One of the things that I do with these kids is I sit down with them and their parent and explain that from now on, parents are going to be willing to ask two times. And in the book, it describes what the ground rules are for those requests. But basically, it goes like this. I'll be willing to ask you politely two times to do what it is I want you to do, and if I have to ask you more than that, I'm going to charge you for the third time and the fourth time and the fifth time. You've got to pay me 25 cents each time I charge you. So, and I tell kids that sometimes moms or dads already have enough quarters, and they're not interested in any more, so instead of charging them a quarter to ask a third time or a fourth time or a fifth time, they can charge them a job. And the kids always want to know what the 25-cent jobs are, and I always tell them, well, it's something like scrubbing one toilet, that's a 25-cent job, or vacuuming one room, or sweeping the kitchen floor, or cleaning off the kitchen countertops or tables, those are all 25-cent jobs. And it's, you know, it's again one of those things that the kids really react to. And I always ask a kid after I tell them about a trick, I always say to them, you need to ask your mom if she really would do that. And they always ask the mom. Usually their eyes get pretty big when the parents say, yes, I would. Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's like there was a really very complimentary review in Library Journal about the book. They gave it one of their starred reviews, and their reviewer says these things work because the kids can't stand to see how much fun the parents are having using the tricks.
Now, it's interesting. You also include about how you use the same technique for when kids ignore you, and I think that's one of the most aggravating things that the kids can do, because you will repeat yourself over and over and over. 10 minutes later, say the same thing. They'll just keep doing whatever it is that they're doing, or they'll just continue to ignore you. And, I mean, it's just something that I think anybody that has, doesn't even matter if it's your kid or someone else's kid, it's just so frustrating to deal with that.
Yeah, it really is, and it's one of the, you know, and again, it, you know, lots of times if we're sort of addicted to reason and logic, we keep telling kids over and over and keep asking them over and over, and then we keep lecturing them on why they should have listened to us the first time or the second time, as opposed to just moving away from all that reason and logic.
Now, one of the things that I thought was interesting that you included was kids that are constantly on their cell phones or texting. That seems to be one of the most irritating things that adults do, and the last thing that you need is for your child to do it. And it's just, it's amazing, no matter where you go, the kids are on their phone or they're texting, they're listening to you, but they're not listening to you because they're busy texting. And it's just gotten to the point where even some teenagers that are texting, they're getting themselves into trouble because they're driving while texting, and you know, they're not paying attention in class, so on and so forth. How do you deal with the whole texting / cell phone issue?
I tell you, one of my favorite tricks with that I first came up with the cell phones. Pretty much every mom that I talk to who has a child who has a cell phone, particularly if they are teenagers, they will tell you, I pay all this money every month for a cell plan, and I can never get my kid on the cell phone because either my child just won't pick up or the cell phone is not charged. So one of the first things I came up with about cell phones was, you know, you end up saying, you know what's really going on is your child sees it's your number, so they're not going to answer. That's what a lot of the teenagers do. Because of the caller ID. So in order to get around that, what you indicate to your child is, sorry, it's obvious to me your cell phone's broken. I'm going to go have it fixed, so give it to me. It's not very likely your teenager's going to say, no, it's not broken, Mom. I'm just not answering your call. So, you know, you get them to hand over the cell phone, and you tell them you'll take it to the phone company and have it fixed. What you really end up doing is put it in the bottom of your purse or the glove box of your car for a couple of weeks. And let the teenager kind of stew on it for a bit, and you know they're going to keep bugging you about, when's my cell phone coming back? I don't really think it's broken. And you explain to them, well, you know, it takes a long time for these phone companies to fix things. So in a couple of weeks, you finally let it come back, and you make sure it's charged, and you stand right there with them, and you dial their number, on your phone, you say, see, it rings, so from now on I'm going to expect you to pick up. So that, you know, that's one of the places I started with the cell phones, just to get parents to be able to get their children to answer the things to begin with. The other thing I suggest in the book that we do about the cell phone thing is this. If I look at how many text messages kids send, the record from my office for one billing period, this girl told me that she sent over 25,000 messages in one billing period. I mean, you know, that's I figured it out. It was something like for a waking 16-hour day, she was sending roughly 80 messages on average per hour, and that's how she would have to get to a number like that over a period of a month. So it's amazing how much time some of these teenagers spend doing that. So the one talk I ask parents to have is this. They say that, okay, if I examine your cell phone records and I can see how many you've sent, that assures me that you know how to write. It assures me you know how to get the message delivered, so you better not tell me anymore that your homework's not handed in, and it better not be written poorly. So you kind of tie all that together.
No, it's interesting that teenagers especially are constantly texting or they're on the phone, and it's very clear that they know how to communicate quite well. But when it comes to communicating with people that they don't want to communicate with, they really do a great job of making themselves unavailable.
Oh, yeah. They'll certainly do a lot of that I don't know and a lot of mumbling.
And speaking of the I don't knows, how do you handle an I don't know? Or the I don't knows, I think that's one of the most annoying things that teenagers love to say, or and usually the I don't know, or they just look at you and they just shrug their shoulders, and they'll give you basically a yes or no answer without any detail. It's almost like there was this little I'm trying to remember it, but years ago there was this little routine where the parent would say to the child, "Where are you going out? Who are you going with? Friends? When are you going to be back when I get through the door?" I mean, just very, very vague answers, and it's very frustrating.
You know, that brings us to one of the, you know, like one of the tricks that I use with that is this kind of falls more under the heading of giving kids a little taste of their own medicine. You know, for example, and again, you know, I want the listeners to be aware that these tricks are really explained to kids. I mean, one of the things you can do is you can sit down, you know, if people have a copy of the book, they can sit down and actually talk about some of these things because we want the kids to see the humor that's inherent in it. Like, for example, there's certainly nothing wrong with a parent saying to a teenager, "I'm going to give you a taste of this." So, you know, the kid says later that night, "Hey, you know, Mom, what's for dinner?" And then you just kind of mumble, "I don't know." Well, okay. Or you know, "Hey, you know, may I go over to my friend's house?" "I don't know." So it's funny. The kids and the teenagers find it very, very frustrating when the parents do that. I mean, I had a girl explain to me a couple of weeks ago that parents are always supposed to remain logical. She found it very, very frustrating that her mom would do the I don't know thing with her, even though she does it with her mom all the time. With some of the younger kids, we do the I refer to it as a mandatory I don't know. It goes back to that draining kind of procedure. If they tend to answer I don't know to everything, you say to them, "Hey, I'm sorry, you've got too much I don't know in your system. We're going to have to drain it all out," which means that you're going to have to answer I don't know to every question I ask you. So then you say to them, Saturday morning, we're going to do this. And then come Saturday morning, you know, after they're up, you say to them, hey, I'm thinking about taking us out to breakfast. You could choose and you could get anything you want. Would you like to do that? And, of course, because they're now on mandatory I don't know, for every question you ask, they have to answer, I don't know. And so you say, okay, well, I was thinking about going to this really fantastic place where we could get waffles with lots of wonderful fruit and toppings. Is that something that you would like? And then, of course, they have to answer, I don't know. So at some point, you end up just kind of letting them know, well, okay, since you really don't know whether or not you want to go out to breakfast, I'm just going to go out for myself. Would you like me to bring you something back? So you kind of fool with them like that, just to make the point.
I think one of the most humorous examples in your book is the case with the young lady who would not keep her room clean. She wouldn't pick up her dirty clothes off the floor.
I've used that one so many times over the years.
That is brilliant.
It's one of my favorite ones, too. I mean, the backstory to that one is there was this girl. She was really a fantastic girl. She was a very athletic girl, loved to surf, was very engaging, but she had really hit that sort of opposite kind of phase of her life where she was just arguing with her parents over a lot of things, and a real pressure point was the way she kept her room. I mean, her parents, you know, brought me in a cell phone picture of it. I mean, it looked like it had been invaded by like some circus had come by and the monkeys had gotten out of the monkey cage and gone into her room and just, you know, wreaked havoc for an hour. I mean, everything was all over the place. And her parents were arguing about it. You know, one of them was saying, well, just leave it alone. It's her room. You know, the mom was saying, no, I'm not going to let my kid, you know, grow up to be a slob. And they wanted to know if I could come up with something because, again, they had tried everything. They had tried grounding. They had tried rewards. They had gone into the yelling and the screaming. They had done all of that kind of stuff. And, again, you know, that's part of what this book is all about is giving people alternatives so that if the logical stuff doesn't work, they don't have to move into yelling and screaming and pressure-oriented things. You can move into humor, which is much more powerful. Well, in her case, you know, what we did was we sat her down and, you know, we said to her, thank you for being willing to use your room as a laundry hamper. From now on out, everybody in the family will just simply throw their dirty clothes into your room, you know, excluding underwear and stuff like that. We didn't want to gross her out or anything. And again, part of the backstory is the dad was huge. He worked outside. He had, you know, big jeans. He had a big T-shirt. He had socks and things like that. So when he came home, he would toss those into her room. Her little brother he wasn't allowed to go into her room, but he would stand at the threshold of her door and, you know, throw in his T-shirts and his dirty jeans and, you know, socks and things like that. Well, when we told the girl about the idea of the family laundry hamper, her response was really pretty typical for a good oppositional 14-year-old. She looked at me like I was like a village idiot and said, I don't care.
The other favorite expression.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, she was really going to challenge me with it. And, you know, with every trick, you always give a child an out. You know, for example, when you use tricks like the family laundry hamper, you say to them, look, if you just start cleaning your room so that it's habitable for a human being, I won't have to use silly stuff like this. But in her case, it was, well, I don't care. So she wasn't about to take the out that was being offered to her. It was more like, there's nothing you can do. And she basically said that. You can do anything you want to do, and it's not going to bother me. Well, you know, what was funny about the story, of course, she lasted 4 days. She got to the point where, you know, she could not stand everybody else's dirty clothes, you know, being tossed into her room, even though her room was, you know, a wreck. But that crossed some kind of threshold with her, and she said, okay, all right, I'll clean it up. So she learned a pretty good lesson from that.
Well, that's kind of gross.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really interesting way to deal with it, but it does reinforce, it's taking behavior that the child's demonstrating and doing exactly what they're doing to make a point, and it's just interesting that you figured out a really effective method, especially with something that is one of the biggest complaints that most parents have, because usually it's, you know, go clean your room, go do this, go do that, and it's always about how the kid isn't taking care of his or her stuff. Now, with that whole subject of the I don't care, that is one of the most annoying responses in the English language. What do you do with the I don't cares?
Well, with the I don't cares, you basically have to see that as what they're essentially saying to you is, you can use all the reason and the logic, you can use all the threat, you can come up with anything inventive that you want to come up with, and it's not going to move me in the least toward doing what it is you want me to do. So at that point, if they are just not going to make any behavior change, you really do have to see the I don't care as a challenge from them to see whether or not you're going to follow through. And, of course, you know, with all the tricks, I always tell parents, if you're not willing to follow through, then, don't use the tricks. And, again, you know, the tricks are, they all have a humorous edge to them. They're a little bit edgy, but they're typically pretty funny. Like every teenager I've told about the family laundry hamper, they sit in my office and they laugh about it, and you can see them rolling their eyes and thinking, I hope my mom's not listening to this, because they see the humor, but they really don't want you to do it. Like, you know, another thing that we talked about in the book is, like, with some kids who won't clean the room because they've got, like with younger kids, so many toys all over the place. And there's a trick in there, I refer to it as the victim of capitalism. You know, and again, this is another one of those tricks where you go in with an apology. Like if your child's room is just so covered, you know, with toys and Legos and balls and action figures and, you know, whatever, that you can't even walk through it without, you know, stepping on something or breaking on something, you sit down and you explain to them that, you know, you basically do another one of the apology things. You say, I am so sorry. Our family has been so successful that we've managed to buy you way many toys than you could possibly take care of, and we didn't mean to burden you like this. So, you know, you have that humorous talk with them about that, and you explain that what you're going to do to help them is you're going to box up half of them and put them in the attic or put them in the basement. You know, you're not going to throw them away or anything, but you're going to box up half of them. And that way you're going to see if they can deal better with having half their toys. And, of course, you give them a week or so, and if everything's messy, you go back to them and you apologize again. You say, you know, I am so sorry. I thought if we removed half, it would unburden you. You'd be able to take care of this a little bit better. Obviously, I was wrong, so now we're going to take half of the half. And you keep... You know, you let them know that we'll keep making the pile smaller and smaller until you can manage it. And again, most kids who hear that story, you know, they see the humor in it, but, you know, at the same time, they realize there's a serious intent there. And so they begin to clean up. But I'll tell you, one of the things I've found since I started using that trick, it's one of those unexpected good things is, it sometimes forces kids and parents to get rid of the clutter, because we really have turned our kids into victims of capitalism in a lot of ways. If you look at everything kids have in their room sometimes. I was talking with a mom one time who told me that timeout didn't work. And I said to her, well, you know, what does your son have in his room? Well, he had a TV, he had a DVD player, he had an Xbox, he had a computer, he had probably, 4,000 Lego pieces. He had baseball cards, Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
Way too much stuff.
Yeah, you name it, he had it. So yeah, I remember saying to her, send me to his room. I need a break. It sounds like he's living in a resort. So in some ways, we really have overburdened our kids with all the stuff.
Now, we have a couple of comments from Facebook. One gal wrote in, it depends upon their age. And the question was, what do you do when your child won't listen and acts out? And she wrote, when they were little, spankings worked. Now I take game and or computer time away. That seems to work really well. I tried the timeout thing for about a week and decided this was not for me. Overall, my children have been very good and never required much. Now they're teenagers. Help! And, another person chimed in, take the phones and the computer away. And then another gentleman wrote in, if they are old enough to try to reason with them, I did not spank our kid, 7 of them. You were bigger than they are. Bargaining sometimes works, but reasoning is best. We did all right with our children. All are university graduates. Try to find out why they are misbehaving. Punishing is not always the best. And the last comment is, take away privileges. They are not a right, but something earned, which is a very good point. Just out of curiosity, we had another comment. This is from Valerie. She wrote in that she has a teenage daughter, preteen daughter, she wrote, that tends to sneak a lot of junk food. And even though she does not permit it, she finds that her daughter will sneak it into the house or she'll trade at school. What would you recommend dealing with a child that just is very adamant about eating all sorts of garbage that is not healthy?
That's kind of an interesting question. I'll tell you, one of the things we've used with kids who are just really sneaking a lot of junk food. I mean, there's a couple of things there that you have to look at a little bit seriously. If they are hoarding food, like kids who, some kids, if they're hoarding food in their rooms and saving it, that would be a sign that there's some anxiety underneath all this. And you really wouldn't want to use tricks, with that. But if it's someone who is just really addicted to junk food, I can give you some examples of some of the kids that we've worked with here. They're kids that we work with here that they will eat junk food all the time and they leave their wrappers all over the place.
Mm.
They just make a mess. You've got, chips and cheese drying up under your sofa. You've got empty potato chip bags. You've got, hamburger wrappers, whatever, all over the place. One of the things I talk about in the book is I refer to it as alien watch. Every parent's run into the idea of, you've got all the junk laying all over your house, the empty soda cans, the wrappers or whatever, and you say to your kids, okay, who did this? And you look right down the line and all of them say, not me. So you can't get a straight answer from any of them about who's eating all the junk. So at that point, one of the things you can do is explain to them that they're going to have to go on alien watch. Alien watch goes like this. You explain that during the middle of the night, obviously, the aliens are coming down from the mothership, sneaking into your house, having a little party, eating all your junk, and leaving the wrappers. And then they hear a little bit of motion in the house, and so they beam back up before anybody can catch them. So you get up the next morning, and there's trash all over the place. So explain to the kids that we're going to have to, catch the aliens by going on alien watch. Alien watch means that every night for half an hour or so, they're going to have to sit very quietly in a chair hoping the alien is going to beam down. And the reason they have to sit quietly is because the aliens have motion sensors, and so they're not going to beam down as long as there's movement. So they have to sit very quietly in a chair, their intent being that when the alien beams down, you jump out and grab him. And, of course, you say to them, that's going to be amazingly boring, so think about it. If over the next few nights we just don't see as many rappers all over the place, we'll assume the aliens bugged out. So it's kind of a veiled hint at the kids that unless they quit sneaking the junk and leaving it all over the place, they're going to end up spending a lot of time sitting still in a chair doing something silly like looking for an alien. So it's meant to be a big joke with them, but you've got to be willing to follow through. So if the kids begin to be a little bit more neat with what they use, if they begin to, you know, ask for it a little, you know, more politely and use it more in moderation, you don't have to do silly stuff like Alien Watch.
Well, I think it reminds me of in the beginning when you were saying, oh, not me, not me. I remember the cartoon Family Circle. They had this invisible being that they used to call Not Me, and whenever anything happened, Not Me did it.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting that I'm sure that you know, by doing this Alien Watch, the kids are going to get aggravated because they're going to be tired, they're going to want to go to sleep, and they're going to say, you know, this is stupid, but I think it does subtly get the point across. It's just interesting how when you take something that seems to be, for adults, ridiculous, but you use it as a way to reinforce why negative behavior needs to change. It's really comical. I mean, how do you keep a straight face when you're trying to implement this Alien Watch? I would have a hard time watching them just go through this and not laughing.
Well, you know, you really don't have to keep a straight face. I mean, it's part of the beauty of all of this is it reintroduces humor back into everything. And, I mean, it is funny how, you know, the parents will come back in, and, you know, after we've taught them some tricks or they've, you know, read the book, and they'll say that, you know, they wondered whether or not it would work, but they'll try these tricks, and they'll come back saying, you know, there's just been this huge change, and I think part of it is because it reintroduces some laughter back into the family. You know, we're able to say, hey, look, there really needs to be some serious change, but it's being done in the face of humor and fun and love and nurturing, as opposed to yelling, screaming, taking away, bribing, arguing, and all those things, which are equally unnatural, you know?
Mm.
So, I mean, it's like, I'll give you another example. There was, with some of the, you know, some of the readers had wondered about how do you deal with some of the more snarly kind of teenagers. And by the way, I'm certainly not ever an advocate of spanking or anything like that with kids. I mean, part of the reason I came up with this book is to give parents a way to absolutely get rid of the anger in the system, get rid of the spanking. You know, that stuff is just not going to work. But one example we had with a teenager we worked with recently was she was telling her mom to shut up. I mean, I've used this trick with a lot of kids, but she just stands out in particular for whatever reason. She was just very aggressive about telling her mom to shut up. And her mom, you know, came in tears. You know, the mom had done the arguing, the reasoning, the taking away and all that to try to get this child to change that kind of behavior and wanted to know what I could come up with. Well, I told her about the trick that's in the book called I've Shut Up. And so what she did was she got a little postcard and, you know, on it wrote, I have shut up. And then at the bottom of it, it says, you know, while I've shut up, you may not go anywhere, you may not watch anything, you may not eat or drink anything. And so she warned her child, the next time you tell me to shut up, I'm going to shut up for an hour. And so, you know, the child, I guess, had to try it out. So the child said to her mom, shut up. So her mom held a card up to her that said, you know, I have shut up. And and would not talk to the child for the next hour, which just really drove this particular child crazy. The child really got her attention. We've had parents who've had to use that repeatedly with some other kids. So it
kind of reminds me of the little girl from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the blueberry girl, the one who just demands everything from her father and then winds up she just winds up blowing up like a big gigantic blueberry.
Yeah.
And kids like that, when you give them what they want, it's interesting how it makes them think. Now, just out of curiosity, when you have a child that's more or less a bully, and you see that they tend to act out, especially not so much towards the parents, but you see the way that they act towards their siblings, other family members, or just other children. Do you recommend using these methods for children like that?
Well, look, it's going to depend in some ways on the real underlying nature of the child. There's a trick in the book called Child in Charge. In this one, I'll use this one with kids who are just dying to be real bossy toward their younger siblings, bossing them around. And so I'll explain to them, I'm going to put you in charge of your brother or your sister all day Saturday. And at first, you ought to see their eyes light up. I mean, they think they are going to be giving their brother and sister time out and giving them all kind of horrible chores to do and just really lording the authority over them. But then I explained to them that, no, if we're going to put you in charge, it means in addition to other things, you're going to have to take care of them all day, which means you're going to have to get up at 7:30 so you can fix breakfast. You're going to have to, after you make him or her a nice breakfast, you're going to have to get on the phone and, you know, find somebody to come over so they'll have somebody to play with, or, you know, maybe put on a video or get some games going to occupy them. Somewhere during the morning is going to be a good time to go ahead and do all the laundry and, you know, make sure their room is clean and neatened up. And I just, I point out they're going to be doing that kind of mom-type work in terms of child care all day with that particular child. Because, you know, lots of times these are kids who are trying to take the mom's place by bossing around the other kids. And so we let them know that we're going to put them in charge. And the minute they realize their day is going to be like that, they back way off.
And it's very effective, especially with kids that tend to know everything. And I remember once one of my teachers did that to a student that just insisted upon trying to take over her role. And then I remember she just sat down, I can't remember if it was a boy or a girl, but she sat down in their chair and she said, okay, for the next 5 minutes, you're going to be the teacher. And the kid froze.
Yeah.
The kid didn't know what to do, and just trying to get the classroom to calm down was, it was frightening. And at the end of the 5 minutes, the kid apologized and said, I'll never do that again. And just 5 minutes of being in charge really, did wonders.
Well, again, that says a lot about why these tricks are so potent, because when kids hear something like that child in charge thing, or like what the teacher did with your example, if they realize that you're really going to follow through with it, it makes them finally kind of come to the idea that I better change this, because these interventions are so strange and so odd in some ways, even though they're humorous, you don't want to be trapped in one. Like a variation of what we were just talking about is the equality program. Kids who are trying to, argue with their moms on an equal level and be bossy and stuff like that, you know, we explain to them, okay, we're going to give you a day in which we're going to let you be equal with mom. But, of course, that means you're going to do all the shopping, you're going to do all the cooking, you're going to do all the laundry, you're going to do all the cleaning, you're going to do all these arduous things that way too often fall to moms, but these are going to be your jobs. And it's amazing, again, how quickly they decide, nope, okay, I'll knock it off. I don't want to be equal. I want to just be a kid.
One of the fascinating things that kids seem to be intrigued with is body noises, whether it's belching or flatulence.
Yeah.
And recently one of my younger family members had discovered arm farts. So we're at the pool, and that's all he's doing. And after a while, it's like, okay, can you stop now? It's not funny anymore. And everywhere we went, that's all I kept doing. How do you get the point across? I mean, he'll listen to me, but I can only imagine the friend that he learned it from, what the parent is going through.
You know, that is a perfect behavior to use the draining procedure with. And in fact, there's a section in the book called Burps and Farts. The arm farts that you were just talking about with that child, it's a perfect time to explain to him he has too many of those in his system. They need to take him into his bedroom. They're going to let him drain them out for 15 minutes. Or it could be 5 minutes, you know, whatever you think is really going to get his attention. And then you explain to him, we'll give you, let's say, 10 minutes of standing here doing that, and then you can say to him in advance, if we hear you do it again, we'll have to admit we were wrong. It didn't work. So the next time, it'll be 15 minutes. And if that doesn't work, it'll be 20 minutes. And you know, do it in front of the mirror. You know, so, I mean, that just seems to make it, you know, all that much more something a child doesn't want to do.
Now, it's interesting that some of these kids, unfortunately, grow up and then they remember how annoying they were when they were little, and all of a sudden find themselves in fraternities and tease everybody that they can. But I think, if you force them to just repeatedly demonstrate how they do it and make the noises, after a while, it doesn't become so funny. Especially when they have to look at themselves in the mirror when they're doing it, it kind of loses its appeal.
When they have to do that, it takes away all the reinforcement value of it. It's like, you know, at some point, it's fun for the first minute or two, perhaps, for a child, but at some point you get so tired of it. And again, that's part of what works about it, is letting your child know, if we have to go this far, we will. You know, it's harmless. You know, if you think about it, it's absolutely harmless. It's not going to hurt anybody, but it will sure get a child to knock that behavior off.
Now, we have a comment from the chat room. This is coming from Frida. She wrote, I'm 64 now. I wish I'd known what to do when my kids were little. What do you think of Dr. Spock?
You know, Spock has been maligned in a lot of ways. I mean, I'm someone, it's like, you know, you'll hear people say, spare the rod, spoil the child. I mean, in a lot of ways, I am a believer that we should spare the rod. And I'm a believer that we should spoil the child. I mean, I want children to have a great childhood, to grow up having fun, to have lots of great memories about it. So I'm not a believer in yelling, screaming, arguing, and, you know, doing all of that. So I think if we take Spock's message about being, you know, nurturing, but at the same time, you know, he believed in being firm and setting limits. So I think that's perfectly fine, is to let kids know we're the parents. We have to set all the rules and regulations.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Riley, can you tell our audience how about any upcoming lectures or any of your other books that you have that you feel that they might benefit from reading?
Well, I'm pretty pinned down at the office, so I don't have any lecture tours planned for right now. The other books, though, are The Defiant Child. There's one called The Depressed Child, and my other one is called What Your Explosive Child is Trying to Tell You.
And
so those are all more serious.
Thank you. And folks, Dr. Riley's website is drdougriley.com, and that's Dr. DOUGRILEY.com. And Dr. Riley, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. The one word I would close with is ask the parents to go look in the mirror of themselves and see the biggest trick in the book. Use those and listen and have fun.
Thank you so much. And, folks, thank you for tuning in today. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic Bee Radio Show. Pick up a copy of Dr. Riley's Box of Tricks. Some of these solutions are great, I think. You can even use them on adults, too. It's a great book for any parent, and it's always comical, just if you just want to read something that's really amusing. But thank you for tuning in. Have a great day, everyone. I can't even lie.